Blog Talk Radio.
Thompson, and this is Blog Talk Radio, the Cosmic Citizen. Beautiful Saturday morning here in Colorado. It's about 50 degrees outside. My dear friend, Krystalyn Beek Larson, is on the phone with me. Krystalyn, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning. And we are very pleased this morning to have our guest, Damon Kruger. He's coming to us all the way from South Korea. From Seoul, South Korea, and Damon is a second-generation Urantia book reader, as is Krystalyn, and I've known him all of his life, and it's just a delight for me to be able to interview, and I know it is for Krystalyn, too, for us to be able to interview Damon Kruger with us. Damon, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. It's
welcome to the Cosmic Citizen.
Yeah, thank you.
Is it actually morning for you?
It is actually Sunday morning for me at 2 a.m., so if I seem a little out of it or say weird things, it's because I'm a little bit tired. So.
Oh, I'm sorry. 2 a.m., I had no idea
yeah.
It was going to be that time.
And I'm in the future, so you got to put that into play. So I'm
yes,
Sunday, you guys are starting out your Saturday.
Yeah, you're in the future. How is tomorrow,
sure.
By the way?
It's going to be cold and windy, I hate to say it.
Okay. Well, Damon wants to talk to us today about a really important subject, and it's something that's, near and dear to my heart, certainly, and that is, how do we integrate our body, mind, and spirit, and how do we learn to control our thoughts and really master our thinking and techniques that we might be able to use to do that, specifically meditation and other techniques that Damon knows quite a bit about, and he's going to share that with us today. So if you're interested in improving your life and hearing the experiences of a man who has really triumphed over some difficult challenges, I think it's going to be a wonderful show, and I'm glad you're joining us. Excuse me,
well,
I have a froggy...
Cool.
Okay. What, Damon? I'm sorry.
Bad timing.
I said, that's cool. Thank you.
Yeah.
I still
and,
think it's funny to have you call me a man. You know, I still think of myself as a child every time I talk to you. So.
Well, we're all children.
Yeah, I know.
That's
true.
But I think you've earned your manhood, my friend. So. You
once
know,
you become a
even
dad.
Though I've known you all your life.
Yeah.
Krystalyn, were you trying to say something, honey? I'm sorry.
Oh, I just said, especially once you've become a dad, that sort
oh,
of
yeah,
moves,
yeah, for
moves
sure.
you into adulthood.
Very quickly. whether you like it or not.
So, and we have some callers waiting, and I'm not sure if they're wanting to just listen or not, but I wanted to give you a few moments, Damon, to tell us a little bit about the meditation techniques you've discovered and what, you know, something of your own experience.
Okay.
So are you willing to do that?
Yeah, I can give you just a real quick brief startup of, like, how I kind of got involved in what I'm doing. Really, it was having enough time to be able to do it, but on top of that, I've always been a very interested in meditation and self-improvement through past experiences, really. My father, Terry Kruger, always impressed upon me how important meditation is to improve yourself and balance yourself. And, you know, like it says in the Arantia book, in the Rodin section, taking, you know, how he takes time for himself to, you know, go by himself and independently look at yourself critically or, you know, I don't know what other words I'm looking for, but just to be able to look
maybe,
at yourself. I'm sorry?
Look at yourself more objectively.
Objectively, yeah, there you go. Yeah. And, you know, and not being afraid of looking at yourself in when you have struggling times or simple things that you need to change about yourself, negatively, positively, anything like that that needs or requires change. So how I kind of stumbled on it is just looking on YouTube, always looking for better ways to, you know, find different ways to meditate, you know, using breath, starting out with breathing, you know, deep breaths and relaxing your body into a deeper state, that sort of thing, and using YouTube to kind of listen to videos of what people have done, listening to music, that kind of stuff, people talking while doing a meditation. And I stumbled on a company called Holosync, which is a company created by a man by the name of Bill Harris, probably related to the actor. I don't know. He looks like him, I think. Anyway, he's used specific things like alpha waves, theta waves, and delta waves to create a balance, a natural balance, which your brain already creates through the act of meditation itself. But using these techniques, he's using these waves, excuse me for saying, he's been able to speed up the process that would by itself, just meditating, take years and years for people to accomplish a balance in their brain. So I've been using this technology, and I've been studying other companies that do similar stuff and that kind of stuff, which I'll share a lot with you later on in the show.
Okay, so it's called Holosync,
Holosync. So it's Holosync, I think. Just doing that out of memory.
Holosync, probably. Holosync.
Yeah.
You know, I am a little bit familiar with this. They use visuals, right? Isn't it like color and sound and the visuals? As you look at the visuals, they balance your brain waves as well?
You can. I mean, they have things like that on YouTube, but this is generally just solely using audio waves.
Oh, okay.
So audio sound waves. So, like, if you the way I've had it explained to me, and the way I've studied and found out about it is, your brain automatically goes in through these four levels of waves. The first one, like right now, what we're experiencing is what's called a beta wave. It causes your brain to be most alert and conscious about things around you and what's going on. But when you become more relaxed, your brain slips into the level of an alpha wave, which is causes levels of creativity. If your brain's in this wave, you can inspire more creativity, increase learning abilities. And then you go into theta waves, which becomes more relaxation. People start on this level have more, psychic type of, connections.
More right brain activity.
Yeah. And then when you get slip into delta, your brain is pretty much on a completely unconscious level. So as you go to sleep at night, this actually happens to your brain anyway. So what these waves do is actually increase the ability on a daily basis, if you listen to this, will bring balance back to your brain as using both hemispheres as opposed to how through time we either fall into a right brain function or a left brain function. And with these sounds, they can actually bring balance back and create a better communication between both hemispheres of your brain.
Wow, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
What has that experience been like?
To be honest, when I first started, I thought it was just another hokey New Age company and, you know, trying to buy a buck. But he gives out a free sample to anybody that's curious and then gives you a bunch of information relating to that. So the listening to the free CD that he gives you, it was pretty interesting and gives you a very big tingly feeling all over your body and especially in your brain when you first listen to it. And I actually signed on with him, and it's been probably almost a year and a half now since I've been using this technology. And each level he does, he starts you out at a very basic level. And then over time, we'll increase the intensity of the waves. So as you increase the intensity, you get more effect. And he claims to be the only company nowadays that actually uses that that technology, increasing the intensity of it. Before people back, I guess he said in the 60s, when they came out with this alpha, theta, delta technology, wave technology to balance your brain, didn't go beyond just a basic wave level, and everybody just kind of plateaued after a while, and no big changes were to be had. So he came up with the idea of pushing the waves deeper so it challenges your brain more. So it basically allows your brain to create more of a threshold to take more crap, so to speak. Excuse me if I'm not allowed to say that. So stress-wise, it creates gives you a better level of tolerance to deal with more stress.
Okay, I just posted on the board their website. It's the Center Point, CenterPointe Research Institute, and I posted the website. And I'll ask you in a sec here how you sign up to do it, but just so our listeners know, they can learn all about it. You can find it by searching HoloSync too, but I'll just give you the information about the website, and you can go right there. So now, how do you and you say he'll give you a free sample to try?
Correct.
And this gives you some really good information. I'm looking at the website right now. Now, you said you signed up. So what does that mean? Does that mean that you get you're kind of signed up with the program, and then every so often he sends you a new disc, or do you log in?
Basically, you sign up for levels. Like I said, after 6 months with the first level, it goes through 12 levels, and he says that most people that actually stick with the program, who make it to the 12 levels, actually have the greatest profound changes. And it kind of seems like at that point you're throwing a bunch of money away. And, I feel that sometimes too. But after listening to that, I actually have noticed such a great difference. So when you sign up, you can just get the interest CD. Just say, send me a free CD, and he'll ask you I give you a questionnaire, if I recall, and about things that you want to change specifically. If you're just looking for more spiritual changes, you can click that. And then, you know, if it just gives you more information based geared on what you want to physically change in your life, stress, anger, you know, addictions, that kind of stuff. And then once you sign up, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like if you wanted to, for instance, quit smoking, you said addictions, but what about like weight loss, that kind of thing? Could you?
Oh, yeah. They all kind of gear towards the same ideas is with these waves. And in the later levels, you can do positive subliminal or triliminal type of messages for your brain. So while you're meditating, you can't hear these in the background. So they're subliminal messages that are integrated with these waves to help repeat information to your brain over and over until it becomes a reality. Like if you think about when you're a kid and how many times your parents told you not to do something, don't do that, or take out the garbage. My dad, I'm sure, is laughing after that one. Or take out the compost. You know, how many times did it take to do that? And it takes, you know, oddly enough, your brain many, 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 many times for you to be able to get something. Like if you think about when you're dealing with a child, an infant that's learning the world, what to grab, what to touch, what to put in its mouth, that sort of thing. How many times do we say, no, 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 no? And then how many times do we actually tell yes? So we're programming of what's safe to touch, what's safe to do, what's safe to do something, and what is not okay to do. But how much of that information are we actually programming into that child that is a negative information as opposed to a positive information?
Right.
So, well, we know that it's always caught in the positive. I mean, the Urantia book says that Jesus never taught in the negative. He always taught in the positive. Rather than saying, don't do that, he said, come, do this. You would do well to do this. And he always taught in the positive. So I think that's really an important distinction. Now, what do you... let's talk in general a little bit, and I'd like to take this caller.
Okay.
So, well, why don't we take the caller first and see? We tried earlier, and nobody answered. So they've been since before the show. So let's try it again and see. Caller, area code 970, are you with us? Area code 970, are you there? Okay, I'm just going to mute that call then. What in general, you've been, obviously you said your dad has instructed you to meditate for most of your life, and so have you been practicing meditation for a long time?
Yeah, I tried it when I was in elementary school on the playground, and that was probably not the best place to do it. I tried to get my friends to do it when I was in elementary school too, but it didn't really become a habit until I was about in college. So it's something that I've always, you know, we did it when I was growing up at study groups or that kind of thing at our house that we had, but it didn't really become a reoccurring habit until I was in college. And when I was in college, I'm sorry?
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I said when I was in college, I would just sit for a half an hour, and I started really noticing a big difference of how that had affected my life, my actions, my time management, that kind of stuff. The more it became more easy to deal with things in life, as opposed to just going through every day and feeling exhausted and burned out at the end of the day. So
So do you practice, what method generally of meditation do you practice?
What I learned from my father was just trying to quiet your mind, quieting your thoughts. And he had suggested using a mantra of some, you know, a special word of some kind to every time your mind tries to stray away with a thought or, you know, a weird feeling comes up, is to focus on that word and repeat it until that thought or feeling subsides. So I've used that, but I've also, you know, I've gotten to the point that just quieting your mind, it becomes more natural, and I don't know if it's just being tired all the time, feeling tired, exhausted all the time, that I'm able to relax my brain, but I've gotten to the point, not using breathing, you know, I've looked into breathing, and I think nowadays I've integrated breathing into my routine, but before I never really dealt with that. And, you know, as far as other techniques, I'm still learning about what other ways are doing. You know, people use yoga to do meditation, finding meditation through exercise, walking meditations, meditations with people next to you. Group meditations are always enjoyable. But people talking, I've always found very annoying personally, because it interferes with my ability to get in touch with that sweet spot, that silent area that is so refreshing when you touch it.
So you mean like listening to a guided meditation?
Yeah,
was difficult.
It becomes I don't know. Like I've always felt it's annoying because I get really relaxed and then in that break of silence, and then their voice comes booming back in, and you're back to almost an awake state again. So
right,
it snaps you out of it. Essentially,
yeah.
It snaps out of it. Yeah.
But I don't want to give anybody the impression that those things are bad, because if you can also look at it as almost a therapeutic type of situation. That
yeah.
In those situations, if you can keep your mind relaxed enough, then when somebody's talking, their voice isn't interrupting the state you're in. And that way you can improve upon what you need to focus on. But, you know, some people's voices are just so jarring, you know, just by their sound, that I always felt it was very annoying. But to each their own, I guess.
Yeah,
relate to that somewhat, in that, you know, there have been times where I've been really deep in the meditation and, you know, wanted to be able to go with it. And have felt that I wasn't ready to come out when whoever was running the group decided it was time for for it to end. So yeah, I can relate to that.
Well, and I guess, you know, you are in a state where which maybe a hypnotist would call it a post an hypnotic state, and
yeah.
Somebody could plant a suggestion, and that's perhaps why certain things like subliminal messages are effective in that state, because it plants the suggestion at a deep level. But
right.
I think just meditation, when I was young, still in high school, a lot of my friends were taking classes on transcendental meditation, and it was huge back then. Everybody wanted to learn how to do transcendental meditation. And, of course, that's something that's very big in the Eastern philosophies and a practice that is commonly done. I mean, it's not something that you even think about. You just do it. You just meditate. And certainly for quieting the mind, for focusing your being, for centering, for finding peace, meditation is, you know, incredibly valuable.
Yeah.
One
of the reasons I started doing it, Paula, was... I think one of the reasons my dad started getting me to do it is I was ADD, diagnosed as ADD. And, an ADD child obviously has very little attention span pretty much all the time. So using these techniques, or just even just sitting quietly for a while, has taught me some level of control of my mind, my awareness of what's going on in each moment. So it's helped me in that sense since I've been a kid and dabbled in doing it. So
would you say that it's helped you overcome your ADD? Is that what you said?
Yes and no. I still have issues with ADD at some level, but I'm able to hold my concentration a lot more, listen to people better, that sort of thing. And another thing, not to keep pushing the HoloSync thing, but this guy also claims that it's helped children with HoloSync. So this is a safe technology for anybody of any age to use. Which I think is what attracted me to it. You know, is just try to really overcome any ADD problems that I have or still that kind of come about. You know, I still get fidgety and that kind of stuff, but I don't know that anybody doesn't really get fidgety when they're sitting in a discussion or anything. So,
well, you know, it's part of having an active mind, too. Sometimes, you know, if you have a really active and engaged mind, you know, it's easy for your mind to get drawn away somewhere else. And
sure.
Especially when things going on around you are kind of boring, you know.
Yeah.
I think in some ways, and this is just my own bugaboo, ADD is the designer diagnosis of the age, and in some ways our failure to interest children and to get them actively engaged in what's going on and to keep their bright young minds involved and interested, you know, and I'm really not an advocate of putting children on prescription drugs at a young age. I can't even imagine that people are doing that. But your dad,
well,
kudos to your dad.
We did actually, yeah. Are you there?
What were you saying?
I said we actually did, Barbara Lattice tested me to see if I had ADD. So I did spend some time with Barbara Lattice when I was a kid, and then they, after diagnosing me, they said, we'll put you on Ritalin. And I said, I don't want to take it. I mean, there was some feeling inside me that was just, it was adamant about not taking this drug. And my parents and I came to an agreement, take it for 2 weeks, and if you don't notice any difference within you during the two-week period, you'll stop taking it. And so I took it for 2 weeks, and I didn't notice any change. Maybe like a small change, but not to the point that I wanted to keep doing this, taking this drug. So I stopped taking it, and ever since then, I've made it my personal effort. I made a choice because I did not want to take these drugs to really focus and change on my own, as opposed to letting a drug try to control me to do something that I can do myself.
There have also been some studies out that show that children with higher IQs tend to be the ones that are frequently diagnosed with ADD, and that there's some theory out there that just naturally kids that are exceptionally bright have a shorter attention span when they're young because they're bored easily. And
well, I don't know that I was bored. I think I was just, well, I I can't say that I wasn't bored, but I don't know. I'm just poking fun at myself. But, you know, I don't know that I have a higher IQ than anybody else. But, you know, I just had a real desire to look at things and experience things more than just listening to some teacher tell me how to learn.
Yeah, you know, I think that's in a way it's been our failure it just seems to me, and this is just a perception of mine, and you know, nothing against psychology and nothing against prescription drugs. Although, honestly, friends, I'm not a big prescription drug kind of person. I
Yeah, I think most prescription drugs are worthless. I think a lot of the problems we have can be controlled via the things that were given to us originally on this planet: food, and exercise, and a healthy attitude.
Well, let's face it, this body that we live in is the greatest chemical machine on earth.
Yeah.
And it has the ability to, you know, heal itself if we give it that chance. And the chemicals that it creates naturally are so amazing and so beautiful. You know, things like endorphins, insulin, adrenaline. This body is a gift, and it's an amazing machine. The Urantia book says that we're electrochemical beings, and I think to some degree when we add other chemicals into the mix, we're interfering with the natural chemistry. And so, you know, and I fully understand that some people have to do this to live. My gosh, Damon, you probably have been on insulin since you were 14.
Yeah, that's
and I
all
don't
right.
know if you are, but you know, people need that medicine to save their lives.
No, I know, and I'm not against any those type of drugs. And I mean, there is value in it, but I'm talking more like psychological drugs. I think a lot of the issues and depression and bipolar stuff can really be dealt with on a more, you know, I hate to say it, but a holistic level. You know, that's what I'm starting to find anyway. I don't know for sure if that's true, but it seems to be like that's a more realistic solution than creating something out of a lab that has a huge, insane list of bad things that can happen to you if you take this pill, but it will cure this problem or help manage this problem. So, but things like insulin that, you know, like I am still currently in insulin, but I have lowered my insulin intake using diet, which is very cool. But, you know, like prescription drugs that are just every year they come up with some new ailment. I heard on read some article that they came up with a new disease, that the health craze disease. If you think you're eating healthy food, then you're crazy, and they're trying to push that as a mental disorder. So, you know, that seems like, oh yeah. I mean, that's the most insane thing I've ever heard. If you want to eat healthy food, you're psychologically impaired. So
it does seem like our system is often designed to just maintain the drug companies and as much of what they sell as possible. And so few of the medications on the market are really designed to cure disease. Most of them are designed to just mask symptoms. I suffer from migraines and have since I had an auto accident when I was a teenager. And, you know, they definitely have all kinds of drugs out there to deal with migraines or to try to prevent them from occurring, but nothing's really going to cure them.
Yeah.
Other than you're learning how to deal with that, like you said, that electrochemical aspect of your own body.
Yeah. And, you know, I think, you know, integrating, you know, to get on the diet side of this conversation, not to beat a dead horse. I know you've had Diane and Brigitte on this show and talked about food and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think that's a very important part of the triangle. And using food to be your medicine, to help you in improving and maybe even finding a better balance in your electrical functioning body.
Tell us a little bit about how you changed your diet and how it affected you that way.
Well, when I was in college, the big popular diet, and Paul, you've talked about this before, is the Atkins diet. And that was a big, that hit the market, and that was a huge craze about how to lose weight and deal with that and manage that. And I think a lot of people didn't really spend a lot of time reading the fine print on that diet. So a lot of Americans fell into the trap of eating lots of fat and eating lots of protein and not compensating it with the fiber side of the diet. When I was in college, I took a dietitian class, and it was probably the best class I took in college, the most expensive class, but the best one I took that actually got me on the path of figuring out how to eat better and more healthy. So I did do a variation of the Atkins diet, eating a high-protein diet, but choosing the proteins that... as far as meat goes, what would be best to eat, staying away from highly heavy fat meats like steaks and pork, and eating more chickens and poultry and fish. So I did that all through college, and was kind of nuts about it at some point. So like if I was on a trip and I'd be like, I have to eat protein. I can't eat anything else. No pasta, And so I'm sure my friends and my brothers all thought I was nuts. So, but, it did help my diet. But I also had to deal with, as you had mentioned in the past too, Paula, is that your cholesterol goes high. I would eat eggs every day and with some oatmeal to keep the fiber side involved. But I didn't eat a whole lot of vegetables. And I think that in my discovery now that vegetables are probably should be the cornerstone of our diet, as opposed to having just a solid all protein diet or all carbohydrate diet or, a pineapple diet or a lemon water diet or, there's some crazy diets out there. And on some level, I'm sure they all kind of have some function to help you. But I think the thing that in America... We go to extremes, and so when we did the Atkins diet, people were having heart attacks left and right because they were getting so much of the fat and not enough of the fiber side of the diet. And so, with me, what I started doing is just researching what diets I could find, and I actually looked on the internet Cure for Diabetes, and I stumbled upon a book written by the guy named Gabriel Cousins, and also stumbled on a video called Raw for 30 Days. And this video basically was about diabetics, six diabetics, four of them being type 2 and two of them being type 1, which is what I have. And these six diabetics went to this Dr. Gabriel Cousins resort. I don't know if that's proper or clinic. I guess would be better. Clinic to retreat to help deal with the diabetes using a raw food diet, 100% raw food, taking out all wheat, grains, glutens, anything like that, dairies, sugars in general, and watch these people go through a level of detox and emotional roller coaster from the foods that they were eating. And then at the end, one of the people dropped out, couldn't deal with the emotional issue of it, became sick from all the toxins that were being released from his body, and he quit and just went back onto the regular eating a Western-style diet. And the other people that stuck with it were all cured of their diabetes. The only one that didn't completely come off the insulin was a type 1 who, when he was taking started the retreat, he was taking about 70 units of insulin and lowered his insulin intake to 5 units a day as opposed to 70 units a day, just doing this diet for 1 month.
Wow.
So,
you mentioned
You had mentioned vegetables as being a cornerstone. You know, I find that interesting because that is essentially an Asian diet. I mean, and when I was trying to heal myself of ovarian cancer, I read Dr. Michio Kushi's book, and he highly touts macrobiotic eating, which is eating for your locale, for one thing, eating foods that are locally grown. He says your body is just, because you are in a certain place, your body is just naturally adapted to eat the foods of that place, which to me was intriguing. Also, he says eating balanced foods, and he divides them into yin and yang. The meats and such are very heavy yang foods. Sugars and foods high in sugars and carbs are very yin foods. He says that diets heavy in yang foods cause lower body cancers. Diets heavy in yin foods cause upper body cancers. he says things like brown rice, for instance, is a very non-acidic food, and it can create balance in the body. And vegetables, and he points out the Asian diet. He studied, well, of course he is Asian, but he really looks at the Asian diet, why the incidence of cancers are so low, and he really believes it's because meat is not the emphasis. Meat is like almost like an accent to go with the vegetables, and you'll notice that that's true.
Right.
The way Asians eat, they don't eat a lot of meat. They do eat meat. But the vegetables are more the cornerstone, as you said, and the meat is an accent, and they also so they eat very balanced, and they also don't overcook their foods. I mean, wok cooking is about just bringing out the natural flavors, but you even leave a crispness to the vegetables. So here you are living in South Korea. I've been to Seoul. Seoul is such a beautiful city, and literally, I've got to tell you guys, the most beautiful food market I have ever been in my life. We could call it a grocery store, but there is nothing like it in the United States, was in Seoul, South Korea. I walked in there. The food was just incredible. There's sumptuous food everywhere, and it is so well presented. And so, you're living in a culture that's quite different. I mean, when I was in Seoul, very little is prepackaged and processed.
How long ago were you in Korea?
When was that? That was probably 98.
98, okay. Well, nowadays, the Western diet is really taking a hold in Korea, and you're getting obesity to be becoming a heavy problem here. Which is kind of sad to see in these markets. And what's even more disappointing is the gardens that people would, the older generations would create during the summertime and the springtime are being overrun by buildings, like new apartments and that kind of stuff. So they're taking away that element of fresh vegetables and that kind of stuff. But you're right, as far as the markets go, they're, availability of vegetables is awesome, but not like what we have in America. We have more availability of a wider variety of vegetables. But what they have here is all homegrown, and I can't say the percentage of what's used pesticides and what's grown naturally, but I think a majority of it is grown organically, and you're getting a higher level of food that way, which is awesome. So I've been really enjoying that aspect, and when I go back to the United States, I'm going to have to really do some heavy research about finding good fresh food.
Well, you know, the culture, what do you change? Primarily eat? Excuse me. Sorry, Paula. I just wanted to
ahead,
a little more about that. What would you say you eat in an average day or week? What does your diet look like? Do you do mostly raw?
When I actually found out about this, I was so excited that I went for it 100%, which is probably not recommended by anybody. Even in the books, is don't do this by yourself. But you know, I'm always very curious and I want to know how things work, and so I always give myself myself stuck in bad situations because of that. But
what did you
I, did this.
Can you say that again? You went on a raw food diet, or what did you do?
Yeah,
that you
it's basically 100% raw food. I and one of the things they start people out in doing this diet is juicing for about 2 weeks. So using vegetables and basically making a salad smoothie. So any kind of salad, you can just throw it in a blender and blend it up and drink it. But, you know, they do emphasize high, you know, seafood, sea vegetables, that kind of stuff, which is, you know, right at my doorstep, which is really cool. So I eat a lot of, I've changed my diet from eating 100% high meat protein diet to eating almost 100% vegetable diet. So I integrate things like chlorella and spirulina and bean protein powders and kelp and that kind of stuff. And I blend them up or put it in a shaker and make a smoothie that way. So that's my morning breakfast, is opposed to eggs and oatmeal. And these foods are more alkaline and integrating specific sea salts and high mineral salts into your diet as well brings your alkalinity back to balance with a meat diet, as you were saying, Paula, is very heavy and acidic, which is puts your body out of balance, which creates disharmony in your body. And, you know, and eating sugars and that kind of thing also really interferes with your body. And I think a really important key to diet nowadays that we really have to be careful, especially with fresh foods in the States, is GMOs. Even with the foods and meats that you're eating, that we're eating chicken, so it's no big deal. Yeah, but what's the feed coming from? It's usually corn or soy products. And you can't, you know, a lot of farmers are having a lot of problems with getting actual anything different than corn-fed or soy-fed feed for their chickens or even cows. And those are the two easily genetically modified foods on the market nowadays. There's four of them. Cottonseed's another one, and I can't think of the other one, but... You know, they're
corn, obviously, is a biggie.
Corn is easy, yeah.
Yeah,
and
because they use so much of it in everything we eat.
Yeah, looking at soy in all the food that you have, if you look at the ingredients, peanut butter, things that you like, just seem very strange to have soy or some sort of form of soy in there, soy lectin, soy isolate proteins, you know, soy, anything soy-based, soy sauce is actually a GMO. I taught a whole lesson about it at my school, trying to educate my kids to eat better. GMO is a genetically modified organism. GM foods are genetically modified foods. So what they do is they try to change an element in the DNA of the food to be more withstanding to pesticides and that kind of stuff. So bugs won't eat them. They've done studies with, in diet foods, aspartame and any, you know, variation of aspartame, sweet and low, amino sweet, those sort of things are all created in a lab, and animals will not eat GM foods. They refuse.
Wow.
They just know that something's bad about them. They refuse to do it. And when they were studying with NutraSweet, they tried to... they had to force feed these rats to eat the GM foods the NutraSweet that they were testing on, because the rats would eat around the GM ingredients that were in there. So
the rats,
you know, if animals don't eat GM foods, we shouldn't be most definitely not be eating that. So.
Yeah, you know, here's the deal. and I watched a movie, Damon, and I'm sure you've probably seen it. Mei Li, my daughter, She is a health and fitness guru in the making, and a lot of her heroes are people who are who talk like you do. And
yeah.
She brought this movie home from the library. She had it on reserve for quite a while. It's called Food Inc. Have you heard of it?
Oh yeah.
Actually, I haven't.
You have it, okay.
I have not seen it.
Oh, you
Sorry.
Haven't? Okay.
I have not.
Wow. The things that they point out about our food and about the industry that is our food industry, and about how companies like McDonald's have changed the entire way we function with food and around food, and
oh,
how
yeah.
just a handful of corporations pretty much give us all of the food that we eat. And the first thing in the movie that they point out is, you walk into a grocery store and you have all of these signs that indicate farm fresh. They're farm fresh eggs and farm fresh this and farm fresh that, and little iconic images of roosters in front of a picket fence. And they're trying to make us believe that what we're eating came fresh from the farm.
Yeah.
When in reality, it did not. And
yeah,
then they
oh,
show
that.
But here's the deal. How do they feed us all? I think this
right.
is at the crux of the problem, and certainly it's what GMOs are about. If the world is starving, and places in the world are starving, and they have periodically at times because population, we've overpopulated the planet.
Yeah.
And it's hard for us to feed everybody on the planet. How do you feed everybody?
Well, I think we almost have to go back to, America back in the days where people lived with farms in their backyard, gardens, and growing our own. And I think it's disappointing to me that we've given up that ability, our ability to grow and create our own food, to letting companies give us what they think we should eat. The FDA just recently sent out a letter and was very angry that people that wanted to drink non-pasteurized milk, they told them that you don't have the choice or the right to make your decisions on what you can eat, quote unquote, from the FDA. So that's scary. If a company thinks that they have that much power, that they choose what we should eat. We're independent, God-given right beings to choose what we should eat, but we've let that slide so much that these companies have taken over and are telling us what to do and eat, and that's scary.
One of the things that they cover in this movie is, and you'll probably remember this, both of you, when Oprah was sued for saying something about we're saying something about beef. So
right, when she was in Texas talking about
Do you
beef,
remember
right?
that, Kristen? And the thing that she points out, or the thing that comes out in the movie is, wow, this food industry even eclipses our freedom of speech.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
That's what they think, too.
Yeah.
And these companies are trying to force GMOs on people against their will, and I think that's a scary thought. But what's cool to look at is that European countries and some Asian countries have already started fighting against the push of the GMO from their governments. So it gives us hope. I think we just need to get to the so-called tipping point to get people aware of that kind of stuff and be, take charge, get back and take charge of your life as opposed to just going into a store and choosing food from boxes. I mean, that's insane.
Yeah.
The world gave us food fresh out of the ground. Why should we go into a store and pick, let's go get the red box today. Let's go get the orange can today, And they use marketing. They use colors to sell to people. My brother Aaron and his wife Katie just went to South Carolina or North Carolina and said that they met some children that had never seen real vegetables before. All they'd seen is stuff on boxes. So,
wow.
If that's not a little worrisome, you know, it's really scary and disappointing to hear.
Well, you know, there is a revolution going on, and
yeah, that's true.
You know, we definitely have to change the way we think about it. Many doctors have told me over the years, just skip all the center aisles at the grocery store and go around the periphery. That's where all the fresh food is.
fresh
you know,
food.
And I thought, that's a good basic, you know, principle to follow. Just skip the center aisles. That's where all the packaged stuff is. I never myself in my whole life had fresh asparagus until I married my husband. My mom never served us anything but canned asparagus, and I hated it. And he asked once, do you like asparagus?
And there's no relationship between the canned vegetable and the fresh vegetable.
Not at all.
No taste relationship at all.
Yeah.
And my mom was one of these 50s people who thought if it was canned, it was really cool and really good. It was the newest, latest, greatest thing.
Well, and the preservatives they put in there to keep that going, too, is it distorts the actual taste of anything. Do we eat, you know, vegetables included, asparagus, you know, they put insane amounts of monosodium glutamate in there and, you know, and it's still in our food, even though we've been told that monosodium glutamate is bad and poisonous for us, but we still eat it unbeknownst to us, because how many people actually go through the aisles of those boxes and actually read what's in those foods? And it's right in front of you.
They don't read it. That's the problem. And if you're going to maintain your diet, as you know, Damon, because of your diabetes, you really have to read the labels, because there's sugar in everything, you know.
And a lot of that has actually been modified, too. A lot of beet sugars and high fructose corn syrups are included in that. And fructose is actually naturally can be dealt with in your body, but when they change it in the lab, it becomes impossible for your body to deal with, and it becomes poisonous to your body at that point. So,
and even some of the vegetables that we are finding that are pre-washed or pre-peeled and put in plastic bags that we can buy to help us make our salads quicker and things like that. We recently found out that what they're selling as baby carrots, for example, in most stores in the United States, are not, in fact, baby carrots. They're carrots that have been cut up and peeled and then dipped in chlorine to maintain fresh, you know, to supposedly keep them fresher longer, to keep them from rotting in the plastic bags before they're purchased. But the amount of chlorine that soaks into the carrot is a massive amount. And, like, if you leave them out for a little while, you'll notice that they turn white. They get white around the edges. Well, that's because the chlorine is crystallizing on the outside of the carrots.
For example,
my mom has an allergy to chlorine, and she eats a lot of those carrots, and she couldn't figure out why she kept having these blisters in her mouth. And she stopped eating those baby carrots, and the blisters went away. And she had this problem for several years. And here she was eating these raw carrots, thinking she was getting good quality food.
Yeah.
So even some of the vegetables that we get that are, in a way, processed, they we think we're getting raw, in some cases even organic vegetables, and here they are dipped in chlorine.
Well, you know, one thing we can do to push the healthy side of this is to start supporting, you know, the farmer market that Boulder usually has. You know, start supporting local farmers and that kind of stuff, and get back to homegrown foods that you know who's been making it and what they've been doing with it. You know, it's a scary thought to have some company dipping your carrots in chlorine and, you know, not even knowing about it. And, like, the things, like, who knows what kind of crazy stuff they put into children's foods nowadays. What is it, the peanut butter that's jelly and peanut butter in one can? My wife bought some of that, and she, you know, because she thought it was, you know, kind of cool. And so I started reading the label, and I was just like, everything in this is horrible for you. It's a scary thought. Well, I mean, peanut butter should be just peanuts and maybe some oil, but, you know, they put in all kinds of stuff that you just, you know, why is it in there? It doesn't change the flavor. It doesn't change any of this. And it's, you know, I hate to say this, and this is just my personal opinion, but I think a lot of these companies, these bigger companies, are working together to create sickness, to keep people sick, to keep, you know, keep this circle going, to keep people ill, and, you know, so the money goes to all the big companies, and, you know, standing on the backs of the poor man, so to speak.
Well, we have a caller. Would you guys like to take a call?
Sure.
Okay, great. Area code 714, you're on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hey, sister, it's Dave Tucker.
Hey, Dave.
How are you?
Good.
Good. I was just calling in. Actually, I was just calling to listen in. I had to come to work this morning, so I figured I'd call and listen in. I wasn't really expecting to comment. I don't think I'm qualified to talk about nutrition yet.
Oh, come on.
But
Dave,
I am certainly entertained by the topic. I've watched a documentary recently called Food, Inc. I don't know if you've heard of that, but I'd recommend watching it.
We were just talking about that.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. I mean, amazing. I mean, the stuff that goes on and, you know, like companies like Monsanto that, like, genetically engineer seeds like soybeans and to resist pesticides longer. And then what happens is, you know, those companies end up getting a monopoly on those type of seeds. So local farmers can't even produce their own seeds anymore. They have to purchase them from these companies. And, I mean, it's just a horrible situation. It's really terrible. And like I agree with what you were just saying, sir, that, you know, I believe personally that they do set us up for failure. I mean, not much research is being done on nutrition. You go to a doctor who just come freshly out of school and earned his doctorate, and he can't tell you very much, if anything at all, about nutrition and the benefits of vitamins or exploring into megadosing with, like, megadoses of vitamin C and all these different types of alternative methods as opposed to, like, radiation for cancer. I mean, come on, are you serious? You're going to be killing all the cells in your body, not just the unhealthy ones that are cancerous, but also the healthy ones. I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And I mean, it does when you follow the money, and that's the sad thing. I mean, that really buys into this whole age of materialism that you can really take a look at it and how deep we are. I think it was Stalin who had said that you can judge the validity of a country based off of how it treats the least of its citizens. And right now, it's not very good. It really isn't.
Not in America, for sure.
Not in America. I mean, I watched a Dateline NBC about a year or two ago where they were taking people in the hospitals who just didn't have insurance, and they were dumping them on the streets in their hospital gowns, wandering aimlessly. And it's like these, I mean, not just on, I mean, even just purely on a basic human level, where's your humanity at? I mean, when we can't take care of our own people, it's disgusting. It just hurts my heart. It really does.
Yep.
Man,
you're preaching to the choir here, man.
Well, and we started out today talking about the power of the mind and thought control and in the positive use of the term, utilizing meditation and changing the way we utilize our mind to affect our body chemicals, not just in terms of what we eat, but also, you know, how we think and how we feel. We started it off in that direction originally, and I would just
I'd like to get
sort
back
of
there.
Go back to that just because of the the effects that we have been able to find through many different forms of research, that that certain emotions and certain frames of mind can affect our bodies chemically. For example, we know that stress can harm us on a cellular level. We know that anger can cause a lot of physical problems.
Yeah.
We know that, you know, there are certain electrochemical effects on our brains and our bodies. For example, living near high power lines, the magnetic flux control that can affect our bodies on a cellular level negatively.
Microwaves. We have microwaves in our kitchens that affect us, and you know, we just consider it a commonplace thing.
Also, you got to look at dental health is a lot to do with it too. Dental health. I mean, we're putting mercury in our mouths. Isn't that the most poisonous type of metal known to man? And we're putting
yeah,
it
one
in
of them.
Fillers. I mean, it's bad. There's cases.
Yeah.
See, I work at a university, and we enroll students for dental hygiene. And we have one of the most high-tech dental hygiene labs in the entire country here. It's an amazing, amazing facility. Yet there's a lot of students, you know, who are really doing the research, because it's part of what we teach is research and learning the latest and greatest technology. And they're finding lots of research about people in the dental health profession, dentists, dental hygienists, dental assistants, who are getting ill mysteriously, and they don't really know why. But some of the research is pointing towards the hazardous materials found within the facilities, like mercury, case in point. You know, our dental health actually has a lot to do with our physical body as well. There was a patient here who had a severe rash breakout all over her body, and she thought it was one form of bacteria or disease, and it ended up being that she had like a dead tooth in her mouth, and when they pulled that tooth, the rest of her body healed, I mean, immediately. It's a domino effect, you know. We really have to pay attention to, as you started to point out, the mind, the intentions that we set with what we're interested in listening to, what we get emotionally involved with. Because when you do have stress or anger or all those type of negative tendencies, you release free radicals throughout your body. And those free radicals just have a heyday. They go to town, and they do as much as they possibly can to disrupt what's going on in an effort to save the body. But because it can't actually save the body, it ends up doing more damage than good.
Yeah.
Well, and we got another caller, you guys. I'm gonna, you know, we had one caller that dropped off, and I'm sorry, caller, call back. I saw you there, and sometimes just waiting for a natural break in a conversation to get to these calls. So this is 970 again, Damon, so we'll see.
Oh, okay.
970, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen. Area code 970?
Hello.
It's a tough one, that 970 area code. And I know that's Fort Collins, Colorado, right? You told me that.
Yeah, maybe the wiring's not set right there. I don't know.
Hey, Paula, also, are they hitting one? Because I think if you don't hit one, the caller's probably just trying to listen. Only if they hit one do they really want to speak.
Yeah, hit one if you do want to speak, guys. And that way that'll raise a little hand on my switchboard, and I'll know you want to talk with us. So, okay, I'll mute that
call. Well,
if
I may get on what Dave was saying relating to cells and, you know, how our minds can affect our cellular level, would be good to get back on our point. I had recently stumbled on a doctor named by the name of Dr. Bruce Lipton, who has become almost an outcast in his profession. He was a medical doctor and has become more of a doctor since, you know, just about studying science on a cellular level and that kind of stuff. And he basically goes on to say in one of his books that I actually listen to, that our cells, if you think about what our body is made up of billions of cells. So in a sense, our body is a community, but each individual cell has a function, and each individual cell, you know, is main goal is to create a positive environment. So our cells actually want to be healthy. So with all the ailments that we're having, we're actually, you know, putting negative things in, you know, medicines and stuff are, you know, either helping or doing a counteraction and actually retarding the effect of the cells getting back to homeostasis. And so what he's basically saying is that using our minds, like think of a radio show like we're on today, and we're cells in the radio show. The radio is pumping out a signal, whether it's a negative one or a positive one, and those cells, we're going to react to that that radio frequency. And so if we're thinking all the time negative, like stressful thoughts, like Crystal had mentioned, and anger and those kind of things, really do affect our body on a cellular level. And, you know, as the Wrench book points out too, that what is it in the Marancha Moda, is anger is a spirit poison. And so these things actually affect us on all levels, with the cell trying to look at us as a balanced machine as opposed to an imbalanced machine. So if, you know, we're also commonly taught that we are destined to have heart disease later on in our lives, or my grandfather and my father had, balding. Also, that means I'm going to go bald, you know, these kind of things. Genetically, on a genetic level, we're taught that the genes do the choosing. But according to this doctor, the gene is just like, if you think of an architect, the gene is the map that the architect is designing. Now, the cell itself has a membrane, which he has found that actually does the thinking. It intakes and out, you know, intakes things and exports things from its body. It reproduces, and he looks at the genetic code in a cell as being the reproductive part of the cell, because he's taken that part out, the nucleus is what he calls it, the nucleus out of the cell, and the cell still functions. Now, that's unusual if you take out a genetic code and something is still functioning. It's like taking out some body part and we can still function relatively okay with it. But we'll die later on, and that's what the cell does. Maybe 2 or 3 months later, we'll die because it can't reproduce itself anymore. So,
wow.
It's very interesting that once he figured out that the membrane, the thin crystalline shell that's covering this cell, does all the thinking, and he relates it to a computer. What's your computer? It has a computer chip that is like a thin crystalline shell that does all the thinking for your computer. What is the programming? The genes. So in your computer is all the programs that the potential that your computer can do. The same thing goes for the gene. If it gets a specific protein, the gene can change and do a different thing. So if you had a cell that can become a heart, it's given a protein and the right radio frequency, so to speak, to change into a heart or a skin cell. It's given information. It's already got the plans. It just needs the direction. And so the membrane receives the information and changes it based on the information and the genes that it's carrying.
Beautiful. You know, so, I can't help but think, I posted a quote a little bit ago. The quote is from, of course, the Urantia book, part 3, paper, what paper is it? Paper 111, interestingly enough.
Mm-hmm.
Paper 111, The Adjuster and the Soul. And I'll read it because I think it brings us back to the spiritual place, you know, in meditation, but also getting right in our mind. getting right in our mind, and that's the key. And this quote just kind of epitomizes that. It says, "Mortal mind is a temporary intellect system loaned to human beings for use during a material lifetime. And as they use this mind, they are either accepting or rejecting the potential of eternal existence. Mind is about all you have of universe reality that is subject to your will. And the soul, the Mirantia self, will faithfully portray the harvest of the temporal decisions which the mortal self is making. Human consciousness rests gently upon the electrochemical mechanism below," that's the body, right? "And delicately touches the spirit Mirantia energy system above," that's the soul.
Right.
"Of neither of these two systems is the human being ever completely conscious in his mortal life. Therefore, must he work in mind, of which he is conscious. And it is not so much what mind comprehends as what mind desires to comprehend that ensures survival. It is not so much what mind is like as what mind is striving to be like that constitutes spirit identification. It is not so much that mind is conscious of God as that mind yearns for God that results in universe ascension. What you are today is not so important as what you are becoming day by day and in eternity." So,
that's scary, because I actually had that quote as a reference for my for this show.
Well, it is the definitive quote.
It is.
And, you know, there you go. I mean, you started by talking about meditation, and that is about stilling your mind. What they're talking about is being conscious.
Yeah.
Being conscious of what we do, doing things deliberately, doing what we do, even the most mundane things, eating consciously,
yep.
Living consciously. Bringing consciousness into and deliberation into our lives, our daily lives, the way we treat people, the way we interact with people, the food we eat, the rest we get, the way we treat ourselves. You know, I mean, it's like twofold. It's what we do to others, but also it's what we do to ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, as Jesus said at one point, man is not defiled by what he puts in his mouth as much as what comes out of his mouth.
Right.
And I always remember that too, you know, but even then it's still about what we do have control of, and they're talking about that electrochemical mechanism, that's our body. You know what? Until we have pain, we're not conscious of it. We don't feel our liver, man, our liver is just working. It's working, working, working. Our heart is beating every instant of every day, every moment, waking, sleeping, our heart is there on the job, our lungs are breathing, our mind is working. All of these things are working constantly, and we're not conscious of them unless they're in pain.
You so realize how screwed we'd be, excuse me, how in trouble we'd be if we had to think about and manage all that on our own, and we can barely manage our lives here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then we've got our spiritual selves, right? Our soul, which is talking about our spiritual Mirantia self. And for those folks who don't know what I'm talking about when I say Mirantia, it's a phase of existence that between material life and spiritual life. We don't just jump from one to the other. It's like trying to get across a raging river without a bridge. You've got to have that bridge. And Mirantia is that phase of existence where we become more and more spiritual and less material. And so our soul is like an embryonic spirit. You don't die and become a spirit being. You don't just magically become a spirit being. There's a phase of existence in between those two realities. And the Urantia book calls that Mirantia. And if you do the etymology of the word, Maracha essentially means akin to matter, not matter, but akin to matter. And and that's a phase of existence. So we've got that soul and we've got that body, and we're not wholly conscious of either one, but we are in our mind. We do have power. And that's what, you know, you were talking about, Damon, and what, you know, the blurb you sent us for the show was, here we are, we're in our mind, and now we have control of what we can do. We can get in touch with our mind. We can meditate. We can concentrate. We can deliberate.
Yep.
We can decide.
Well,
we can take control.
I'm sorry to interrupt. The point of what the main reason I wanted to talk about is what we're talking about now is relating to Dr. Bruce Lipton and the radio, or excuse me, the Holosync stuff, to get back to that too, is that both of these people and several other people that I've read, and Eckhart Tolle also talks about being in the moment and getting in the now and really paying attention to being aware of everything we're doing, even just eating or drinking a glass of water or our emotions at every given moment. But they all relate to one thing, the spirit being the most important, and the receiver, our body, being the second most important, and then the environment of which things that we surround ourselves with. So if you think about the things that we're surrounding ourselves with every day, or, you know, willingly or unwillingly, visually, you know, audible, I can't even think of the word right here.
you're doing great.
Using our ears, our skin,
that
kind of stuff. Okay, orally, there we go. Oh, Jesus.
orally is with my mouth, but orally, A-U-R, ear, yeah.
All of these things, we're constantly being bombarded by almost negative things. If you think about the news, what are we hearing in the news nowadays? Terrorist attacks. Flu, bird flu, swine flu, a hybrid of this of bird and swine flu. Here in Korea, when that hit, people panicked and ran to the hospitals to get injections. And before that, hand sanitizer was impossible to find in Korea. And now it's on every shelf everywhere. So these things are really encouraging. Either two things of what our body really functions by, if you think about it, really break it down to the simplest way, is how our body is going to function on a fear-based level or on a love-based level.
Fear or anger-based level that we get just bombarded with from the news.
Yeah.
Using
meditation has been a scientifically proven fact that it can reduce stress.
You also
in a huge amount of it.
You also had mentioned in a previous conversation, you know, about the various flower oils or essence oils, and used to release emotional blocks. You wanted to talk a little bit about EFT, and we're down to practically our last half hour, so I thought I would bring that up, see if you could bring the conversation around to how that affects your meditation or what influence that has on your mind and your emotional balance.
Well, using EFT, you know, emotionally we're all,
and this,
you know,
is
we've
not
got
ESP back. We're talking about.
No,
E is in Edward, F is in Frank, T is in Tom, EFT. What is that?
It stands for Emotional Freedom Technique. And what that is using is using meridian lines on your body. That you know, going back to ancient Chinese medical therapy, is using acupuncture. But these aren't doing acupuncture, sticking pins in your body to create emotional release. It's actually just taking your fingers and tapping specific meridian body points, like the top of your head, the middle of your forehead, above your lip, the side of your eye, your chin, your collarbone area, your under your armpit, the side of your hand are the most commonly used ones. And they're using this and finding greater results, quicker results of letting go of problems that keep reoccurring and holding us back from achieving any forward movement in our lives. If we want to change something, like a chain smoker wants to stop smoking, they can use EFT or the flower oil that Diane had talked about, or using these other technologies, hypnotherapy, that kind of stuff. But EFT is physically acknowledging you have a problem, tapping on it on those meridian points, acknowledging it, and also, and then realizing, being aware, again, being aware of your problem and making a choice to change it. But tapping on it here, it reinforces through these meridian points into your body using positive affirmations about, okay, I really want a cigarette, I really want a cigarette, but I don't need a cigarette. You know, I love and respect my body. I'm creating an environment where I don't need to be smoking, that kind of thing. So in on that sense, the words and the things that we say become effective as well on an everyday basis. If you're driving down the car, somebody cuts you off and you start yelling at them, what energy are you projecting outward and inward into your body? Negative energy. So now, if by doing these EFT tapping, you're releasing past problems, maybe you acquired from your parents when you were a child. Children, when they're growing up, are observing, constantly recording everything. So if you have people surrounding you that, for example, there's a little boy, there's two children, and one, and they live next to each other, and one mom is afraid of snakes, and there's a snake in the yard, and the little boy runs up to it and is about to touch it, and the mom screams, "No! Don't touch that thing, it's dangerous!" The kid will later become recognizing every time it sees that object, it's going to be afraid of it. But the same child next door sees a snake, and the mom has no problem with snakes, and says, "Oh yeah, check it out, touch it." That kid's going to be more accepting about what that information they're receiving. So it's important that we pay attention to the things we say to each other, to ourselves, and things we say about ourselves too. So if you're
we certainly wouldn't have wanted to do that where I grew up.
Why that?
Because most of the snakes we would touch would kill us.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Well, but, you know, throwing a little levity in there.
What is dangerous? Sorry, Grislin. You're right, though. You know, sometimes danger is a good thing. Sometimes a warning is a good thing, and we have to remember that. But sometimes fear is a spiritual poison. And we're right now in America, we're in the throes of another crisis where, you know, we're looking again at how words can harm and how, you know, angry vitriol can create, you know, situations that are dangerous for everybody. You know, if they fall on the wrong ears, and, you know, incitement to violence and that kind of thing, you don't think you're doing it, but you really are, you know. And
yeah.
So I think just in general, we do have to be conscious. And again, it's back to being mindful about what we believe. And earlier on the board, somebody, excuse me, somebody calling herself a Reiki master made a point, and I thought it was just really a good point to make, and that is, if you believe that something is harmful to you, and you're like what you're eating, for instance, if you're eating something and you believe and you know in your heart that that's harmful to you, and you believe it's harmful to you, but you eat it anyway, well, that's really bad. What are you doing?
Yeah.
You have to...
Well, on top of...
You know,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead, Damon.
On top of that idea, Paul, is that if you look in the medical community, that, you know, people, cancer patients and AIDS patients and people like that have miraculous healings, and people, you know, doctors sit there and scratch their heads and don't know why. And it's really that those people have just, you know, they're like, I don't care anymore. I don't care about being sick anymore. I'm just going to live and enjoy my life and love myself. And those things have so much more power and weight that they can, you know, as faith, so to speak, can move mountains, so can your thoughts and positive positive feelings. Like it says, Jesus says that, or I think it's Jesus, that says that love has more weight or can wipe out evil, the worst evil possible, just by sheer love and faith in things that we believe in. And so those, you know, it dawned on me that, you know, being able to control your mind about how you perceive things has such a great effect that it can heal your body almost instantly using, you know, emotional techniques or listening to specific waves to help you get to that point, then, you know, so be it. But that's amazing, you know, and faith can do that too.
And let's not leave out the spiritual aspect of that. And so often in contemporary philosophy and Eastern thought, we have the idea that thinking is somehow separate from the spirit.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we learn in the Urantia book is that the mind is actually the doorway to the spirit, and that our thought adjuster, the particle of God which resides within us, resides within our mind and does just that, adjusts our thoughts, but only with our permission, because we really are totally honored as a free will being. So for you to try to gain control over the thoughts in your mind, you're also able to engage your thought adjuster through that same technique. So by trying to focus, by trying to eliminate certain negative influences, my experience with that is also to activate my relationship with my thought adjuster.
Most definitely.
And to give my thought adjuster permission to override my more foolish or my more animal tendencies, especially in relationship to anger and fear. I've had the occasion to have to justify the reason why I refuse to listen to certain talk radio or participate in certain really negative blogs or participate in discussions that become really angry, fearful, negative, disrespectful. And my justification was that, well, spending time there is against my religion, because I really believe that promoting anger and fear would be absolutely opposite of what the master would teach.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it's really about faith is the opposite of fear, and anger is the opposite of love. And so if we are going to live in love and in faith, we are training our minds to respond lovingly and not allowing ourselves to live in doubt.
Mm-hmm.
We can access that thought adjuster's will for us, and that is for us to know that, you know, no matter what things look like or on the outside, God's still running the universe.
That's right.
And everything is going to be okay, and we can be healthy, we can live happily, and we can live, you know, with a well-adjusted mind, even amidst tremendous trauma around us.
Mm-hmm.
By realizing that the trauma, it's not that the trauma isn't actually occurring, it's that it isn't cosmically what's the most real.
Well, it's how much energy we put into it too that makes it even more real in our lives too. If we put more energy into the new influenza, then it's going to become a reality. How much energy we put into anything is going to become a reality. And that also, if we put energy into loving each other and helping each other and striving for brotherhood, then we actually get a change in our society. You know, we have to remember that we always have a choice of everything we do.
Mm-hmm.
That
but one,
we can
one
choose
choice
how
is
we feel.
More real than the other. I mean, it's
exactly
like when you say it, you know, you're bringing it into reality. You're bringing it into your consciousness. You're bringing it into your focus. But it isn't really changing reality in a cosmic sense, because the cosmic reality is the truth, beauty, and goodness.
Yes.
So I totally
okay.
understand what you mean. You know, we can all run into a panic, but it doesn't necessarily mean that that would be a divine reality.
Right.
Well, God's not in a panic. We know that.
Right.
But can we take a caller, you guys?
Yes.
What's our
okay,
time
great.
Left, Paula?
We got 24 minutes, huh?
All right.
Okay, area code 609. You're with us on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hello, everybody. This is Paul Conklin again. Glad to tune in with you again this week.
Welcome,
yeah, nice
Paul.
To hear from you.
Yeah,
hey, Paul,
was,
I wasn't here last week, but welcome.
Oh, thank you. I'm sorry, I didn't catch your name.
I'm Damon Kruger.
Hello, Damon. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
you
too.
I was thinking about some of the things that you were talking about. And last week, of course, we had the tragedy here in this country. And people are so upset over that type of thing and the grief that they have to go through.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about, not only in a tragic sense, but so many people have to lose their loved ones. And those of us who are familiar with the Urantia book, at least we have that hope of going to the mansion worlds when we die, and that faith gets stronger every day. But there's so many people out there who don't have that same faith and the same hope, and they're really hurting. So what I did was I wrote this poem, and I entitled it When I Die. And I thought I would share that with you if I could, and then get your thoughts
please.
On it. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Absolutely,
yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the poem is entitled When I Die. In the mists of despair and the rivers of darkness, there exists a column of light bursting through the branches. Up above the boughs, atop the scented pine, there twirls a wind that gathers the clouds into formation. Where the eagle flies, soaring upon the ethereal sky, is a place where true serenity lies. Up above the clouds, atop the endless sky, there is a light piercing through the ozone and alighting upon the moist earth. In the dew of early morn, one drop hangs precariously, ready to quench the thirst of needy roots down below. Down below the fallow surface, tendrils lap up the tender emotions that fall from on high. The meadow awakens as the sun peeks over the horizon, finding a home amidst the fog of the glen. Photons part the curtains of obscurity as the mist flees, dispersing into the tranquil atmosphere hidden from our eyes. There is a place where I shall go when I die, a place where the eagle flies upon the ethereal sky. There is a place where I shall go when I die, a place where light dances atop the boughs so high. When the mists of despair and the rivers of darkness surround your form, you struggle and panic. You plunge beneath the surface as the waters overtake you, lungs fill to exploding as you sink to the bottom. Sinews of light pierce the depths like an outstretched hand. You grab hold, hoping that the triple strands hold your weight. Expulsions of air are expelled from your lungs as you black out, until you find yourself upon the glen, wet from the early morning dew. Deep in your soul, the stillness of eternity awaits for you to find that meadow buried within your heart, a meadow where light parts the rivers of darkness flowing through your veins and into the seat of your life. When my breath fades and my color is pallid, carry my ashes to a field so golden. turn over the urn and let my dust become one with the wind blowing by. Watch as a column of light bursts through the branches high above. A wind, delicately retrieves the ashes, swirling, up above the boughs, atop the scented pine, where clouds form, heavily laden with the waters of my life, falling back onto the ground. There is a place where I shall go when I die. Like the eagle, I shall spread my wings and fly. There is a place I shall go when I die, atop the scented pine, up above the boughs, so high.
Wow, beautiful, beautiful, beautiful.
That was very nice.
Love you.
Yes, thank you. I know, again, the people are, they're hurting very much, and I think for myself, my own journey, my faith in the afterlife has gotten very strong, and I have lost my own son back in June, and it was a very trialsome thing, but the thing I noticed was that when I was praying about that particular instance, I felt like I was going into a panic and I wouldn't be able to handle it. And then when I prayed to the Father about it, I really did feel a peace and serenity come over me. And I felt like in the last couple of years, I was being prepared for this event because, in my opinion, they already knew that it was going to happen. And so it was like a few years prior to my son passing, I was reacquainted with the Urantia book in the Mansion Worlds. That was back in 2006. And so even though it was a very hard thing to deal with, it was like I was being prepared for that time and strengthened so that when it did occur, I would be ready. I would be able to deal with it.
The Urantia book's description of life after death, the vivid description that we have of the Urantia worlds and the Urantia life is so beautiful. And I was introduced to the Urantia book when I was really a young child, around the death of my brother, who died right after birth. And my younger brother and I wanted to know really what death meant. And so our very first experience with personal death was about this adventure that lies ahead and this extremely beautiful experience of a much more pain-free, physically pain-free existence. And that we start off right where we leave off here, that, you know, on this planet, it's so traumatic for people to accept when children die and to realize that the gift we get from the Urantia teachings, that children get to continue on and that our relationship with them as parents, as siblings, as family members gets to continue on. And that we are temporarily separated from them, but that relationship is not over. And I think that's very comforting.
And true. That's the coolest part about it.
Yeah. And for Damon and myself, for people who grew up, you know, from the earliest age, knowing with absolute certainty that life after death was more than just some ethereal image or some unclarified idea, that this was something that we almost had physically experienced by, you know, sort of having watched the movie, you know, that it's very real for us. I don't know about you, Damon, but I know for myself and my brother, we just never had any fear around that. And to grow up without ever fearing death was really a gift.
What a gift.
For me, I've had several experiences that I've almost been taken out of this life. And I'm always so thankful that I'm still here, but it also makes me realize that we have really nothing to worry about. I had a very severe low blood sugar seizure problem and was completely out of it. I had no conscious thought or anything, but when I came to, it dawned on me that, you know, whether we end, it's the extremeness of those incidences people see and watch are far more tragic than the happening to those people. Like when I had this such bad low, I had no clue what any of this was happening to me. And when I woke up, I was normal and kind of scratching my head, looking at the other people looking on at me in panic, going, "What's wrong?" But it makes you realize that, you know, it's nothing to really fear and worry about. That you're going to wake up in the next world, whether it's a new body or, you know, a new spirit level. But it's a comfort and a you know, almost a longing that you don't have to worry about these problems. That, you know, fear has never been an issue for me, and I've done some really stupid things because of that too. So, I have become realized and more sympathetic towards my brothers and sisters that don't know that truth, and through my actions, hopefully they can see and realize that there is nothing to truly worry about.
I
have to say to you, Paul, thank you for calling again and sharing your exquisite poetry. You've got a gift there, man, and it's really beautiful. And as somebody who loves poetry dearly all my life, that you really have a gift, and I would love to see you publish some of those, and I will help you do that if you will write to me and send me some of your poems. I'd love to get them into some fellowship publications. I'm the director of the Orange Book Fellowship, and I just want to put in a plug for the fellowship. The fellowship sponsors us on the Cosmic Citizen now, even though what we say is our own opinion, and it's not a representation of the Orange Book Fellowship. We wouldn't be on the air every week for 2 hours if it wasn't for their sponsorship. So,
right. We found out at the beginning of the year that Blog Talk Radio had changed their policy and charges for the time. So we were very grateful to them for allowing us to be able to continue doing the show.
Right, because it is an important way for people to connect from around the world. As Damon has told me a couple of times, Paula, when I tune in and I hear your voice and Crystalline's voice, I feel like I'm at home. It brings me closer to home, and here he is in Seoul, South Korea. So that's wonderful. But the other point about your poem, Paul, and what you and Damon and Crystalline just said is that death is not the worst thing that can happen to a person. A life lived in fear and regret and remorse and, you know, just literally paralyzing fear and doubt and shame and blame and guilt, all the things that we humans do to make a hard life even more hard, that is worse than death, really. To live without fear, to live courageously, to be a child of God, to be set free, to play in the universe, to, as our good friend Byron Belizzo says, to romance the universe, to not feel alone.
Romance the universe, absolutely.
Yeah, not feel alone in this life, to know that God has your back, God is on your side. He's not one more person waiting for you to fall so he can kick you when you're down. I mean, the Arantia book gives you, it truly does liberate you. It liberates you.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Live courageous lives before God, and to explore all of the infinite possibilities of creature life.
And to realize sometimes that, you know, some of the things that we think of as being so tragic, you know, it become some of the best fodder for humor, you know. And one of the ways that I think I can judge my spiritual growth is how quickly the tragedy turns into comedy. You know, how quickly I move out of that frame of mind of being, you know, panic-stricken and terrified or traumatized or reacting like worst-case scenario, how quickly it turns around and becomes a big joke. You know, like, oh, my God, what was I thinking? Like, even giving into that. You know, Paula, you know, one of the experiences we shared earlier this week, where, you know, I could have very easily gone into panic And then realizing, hey, wait a minute, this is a test. This is only a test, you know. And this is just designed to, you know, to kind of disrupt my equilibrium. And I can look it in the face and laugh at it and go, you don't have that control over me.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
You just cannot make me unhappy.
Well, you're exercising your ability to choose what you want to feel, and you know, using your spirit guide and your thought adjuster and everything to push that into motion, into the direction that you want it to be.
Exactly. And you know, I want to acknowledge, Paul, you said that you lost your son, and of course, anybody who's ever been a parent knows that that's the worst thing, you know, we can imagine that could happen to us. We'd all rather die 1,000 painful deaths ourselves than to lose
yeah.
our child. And we all imagine that we'll go first, never our child. And so, but just to key in on something the Urantia book says, and that little girl that died in Tucson, and watching her parents, you know, so brave and courageous on television, and the Urantia book says that those children are held asleep until one or the other of their parents is resurrected, and then they're resurrected and reunited. And so that parent doesn't miss one moment of that child's growth and development and life. And to me, when I read those words for the first time, there was so much comfort in that, because that is the universe that I have come to know from the Urantia book. And it says something like, nothing in all of the scenes of the ascension, nothing is more touching than the sight of these parents and children being reunited. And I can imagine the way the parent feels to realize, I've lost nothing. All of the years that I've spent in agony over losing this child, but really I've lost nothing. This child is restored to me intact, exactly as they were. And now I get to help raise this child just as I had hoped and dreamed, and nothing is really ever lost. And to me, that's the universe I've come to know and love and trust because of the Urantia book. It's shown me a universe of love and peace and goodwill and mercy and acceptance and understanding and tolerance, and a universe that reaches out to us with so much compassion. You know, so my heart feels for your loss, brother, but I know I'm glad you found the Urantia book again, and I'm glad you're channeling this passion into these poems you write. Wow. Kudos to you.
Thank you, Paula. I appreciate that very much. And, yeah. I would like to get your email address. I could send you or talk to you about it.
Yeah, are you on the chat board? Because I'll type it in, and if not, I can just give it to you.
I'm sorry, say again.
Are you on the chat board with us today?
I'm not finding it at this moment. I'm trying to find it.
Okay,
I can't get it.
The email is UBOOKSRUS, Books Are Us, @AOL.com.
UBooks
Are Us. You're writing that down, Paul. I'm sorry.
Yes. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'm a new parent. I just had a a 4-month-old daughter. And, you know, I can't even begin to imagine losing her. You know, I've fallen in such love with this little infant and child and human being. It's just an amazing experience. And to lose that is got to be such a just tear your world in half. But to be able to do what you are doing, positively projecting that those feelings of doubt and, you know, and wonder and sadness into a positive direction using poetry is an awesome way to deal with it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that's how it's really helped me to really strengthen my faith, because I've definitely felt my thought adjuster coming in the last couple of years very strongly into my heart and mind. And sometimes there's these feelings that just come to me that are so powerful I can't even describe it. And then I'm able
mm-hmm.
to take those feelings and transcribe it into the words that I feel. coming through, and that really has helped me. And really, it's a gift to my father that I want to give back to him as well, because I know people are suffering,
sure.
And it's my gift I want to give back to others as well.
Well, keep on giving, man.
Thanks a lot, Damon. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Well, really, and it's full circle, because it goes back to what Damon began with, and that is that we can choose, and we can, you know, we may not be able to always choose what happens to us or the circumstances we find ourselves in. Life is like a great card game. It's equal parts skill and chance. And, you know,
mm-hmm.
you never know what's going to happen. Bad things happen to good people all the time. But it's what we do with those things. It's how we react to those life situations and what we give back as a result of those difficult and challenging situations that define us and define our lives and define our world. And, you know, we can spend our lives in bitterness and anger, or we can, you know, no matter what bad card life throws at us, we can turn around and with all the skill we have, make that a beautiful thing and channel that into good and positive, wonderful, you know, words of truth and beauty and goodness or whatever
mm-hmm.
we create. And I think, Damon,
well,
that's what you've been trying to say, and I take that so to heart.
Yeah.
You know, we do have a responsibility, and that when you pick that word apart, a respondability, an ability
mm-hmm.
to respond.
That's right.
And that is the crux of our own choosing and our free will. We have an ability to respond to whatever
yep.
situation we're in. And we can
And Damon, I would like to relate.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and Damon, you're a new dad also.
Yeah. Well, that's what I just said, too, so to Paul.
Yeah.
But I wanted to relate to what Paula was saying in my experience when I was diagnosed with diabetes at 14 years old or 14 or 15. I was bombarded with doctors and people to help me through the problem. And I had one woman... I think she was a counselor or something, told me, she goes, "You're going to go through depression." She told me that what I was already going to feel ahead of what I was going to feel. And you're going to do all these things. And if, you know, and she was talking to my parents, if he wants to dye his hair purple, he wants to get his ears pierced, let him do it, because that's going to help him transition. And, you know, since then I had, you know, since that point of having that lady tell me what I was going to feel, I made a choice, and it was almost like an awakening of
not to do that.
what I can do. Yeah, well, you know, I'm not a victim, and I think that that's
right.
what we have to get away from in our society, is that
right.
we're not victims. You're either a doer or a sitter on the bencher, you know?
Yeah. I cannot tell you how many times I've had to deal with that, too, because of my being chronically ill, and I recently had a chance to read one of my medical reports where somebody had written, you know, that I had been chronically depressed because I'd been dealing with this pain issue for more than a decade. And I started to laugh. And it's like, when have I been chronically depressed? Like, give me an example. It's like,
yeah.
you've been wanting to treat me for depression, and I keep telling you I'm not depressed, and you just won't believe me.
Well, you
yeah.
know, I say they're the first to admit they're only practicing medicine.
Yeah, practicing. You guys,
yeah.
I wanted to read one little blip that I just listened to on my iPod, listening to the Urantia book, that just kind of relates back to how special and important we are to the universe in general, you know, and
okay.
to not forget that we're you know, not just little peons running around living pointless lives. Is that the blip from the Korean mission, where he's talking about the sparrows sold for 2 pennies,
mm.
and he relates to that to seraphic guardians, the very hairs on your head are numbered, and if all of this is true, why should you live in fear in the many trifles which come up in your daily lives? I say to you, fear not. You are of a much more value than many sparrows.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So just really focusing on that, we have really nothing to fear. But, you know, I like to quote Winston Churchill, but fear itself, you know, if fear is going to run our lives, then we're going to have a miserable time on this planet. But if we learn to let go, take ourselves out of the way, and let our thought adjusters run our, or guide, I should say, our lives on this planet, we're going to have a much more enjoyable and fruitful life on this planet, as opposed to just living through misery and doubt and pain and suffering.
That's a great note to end on. And we've reached the end of our show.
Perfect. That's how I was planning it in my brain all day. I'm like, I want to end with this quote.
And now you can go to bed, my friend, if you can, but I doubt it.
Yeah.
If you can manage to get to sleep.
I should be able to zonk out. My daughter keeps me awake, you know, on the very up and down schedule, so I should be able to fall asleep, no problem.
Paul, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Paul, my email is youbooksrus@aol.com.
Okay, yes, that's what I have. youbooksrus@aol.com.
Yes, exactly. And
okay.
If any callers that didn't get on today, I'm really sorry. I tried 970 several times though, and they came back. And so I had to assume that you were just listening and. Damon, thanks so much for staying up so late and doing a wonderful show. Everybody on the board loved it. I know you're not on the board, but that's the main way we gauge how we're doing, and everybody really enjoyed the show.
Well, I want to send my thanks to everybody that, you know, you, Paula, and you, Chrislyn, for the work that you guys are putting forth. You know, you guys are leading the way of true spirituality in life. And, you know, to Paul, thank you for your contribution, using your poems to enlighten and uplift people, and to thank everybody for all their hard work, even if it feels like it's meaningless, that you're truly making a difference in your lives, and to always remember that you're love, and to give love and give thanks to everybody that you're doing. And I want to say I love all of you personally, because without you, I could not be.
We love you.
Well,
too,
that's very nice to hear. We appreciate that.
Yeah, and appreciate what you're doing. I've always been interested in your many adventures, your mom and dad, you know, especially your mom, because I see your mom a lot. I don't get to see your dad as much, but she always lets me know what you're up to, and it was so great when you first told me that you've been listening to the show and that you really enjoy it, because it just felt like a full circle experience to me. And by the way, your dad, I sent your dad and everybody on the board your love, and your dad sends it right back to you, babe.
Back at you.
Right on.
So. Said back at you. And I had the privilege of spending New Year's Eve with your dad and Carol this year. And it was
I saw the magnificent picture.
It was such a great, great evening. And one of the things that we shared in sort of our pre-midnight ritual was just the wonder that, you know, we had been in each other's lives, for most of us, for more than half of our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that as we were, you know, entering middle age or older age, that, you know, we knew we would be doing this together eternally.
Yeah.
You know, coming together periodically and talking about what our plans were for the future and how we wanted to grow and what direction we wanted to take. And just what a remarkable experience it was to realize that getting older in this life just is still barely getting us out of the universe fetal stage.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the starting blocks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the words of Pato Bantan, and the Lou of my show, is stay positive. Don't let them get you down.
Yeah. Stay positive, indeed.
That's it. Yes, we have. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks again, and we hope you'll join in next week, either listening to us live, chatting with us on the chat room, or listening to the archive show. And thanks again, Damon, for being with us.
Thank you, guys. Yeah, definitely.
Come back and visit us again.
I will try to. You know, there's more I would like to talk about. If people want to hear more about this, let's do another show. I'd be up for it.
All right.
Great.
We'd
great show.
You
did a great job.
Thank you.
All right.
Thanks.
Goodbye. Have a wonderful
day. Lots of love
with
you guys. Yeah, you too.
God bless.
God bless. Bye for now, friends. Until next
week.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.